I was visiting a friend of mine over at KU at the Phi Kappa Psi house. It was early on Sunday morning, and somebody ran in the room and said, Pearl Harbor has been bombed. I didn't have the vaguest idea where Pearl Harbor was. That's when the war started.
Yep. You were 19 years old then. Do you remember being nervous that they were going to come over and bomb the continental United States and Kansas?
No, I don't think so. Because I found out where Pearl Harbor was, and I knew there was a big ocean out there. And so I wasn't very concerned that the Japanese would come from the west. And I can remember hearing on a radio Hitler and his people were taking smaller countries, Belgium, and then in France.
Poland.
And Poland, that's correct. So when I was at Washburn, I signed up. So that when I got my degree, I would then go to officer training school. And that's what I did. Navy.
Did you get your news on radio, but in the theaters?
Yes. If you'd go to a movie first, before they showed the movie, they'd show the news, what had happened, maybe during the preceding week. In the war, there would be well-known men who were the broadcasters, and they became famous names that you came to know.
Edward R. Murrow is one of them.
That's right. He was one. He smoked, too.
Yes, he did.
And he died from smoking, I think.
Yeah. Did you have family members or neighbors who signed up right away?
No, I don't remember that, but I do remember that I had an uncle that was my mother's brother. He wasn't in World War II, but he had been in World War I, maybe a second lieutenant in the Army. He rode horses, I know, and he had a quirk that he used on his horse, and I have that now.
You were involved militarily because you joined the U.S. Navy Reserve.
Actually, I was in the Navy Air Corps. When I graduated from Washburn, I had my degree. And I was eligible then and did some training in New Jersey and some other places. I learned how to fly. But one day they said, people with college degrees can become line officers. And we need line officers more than we need aviators. And there were some people that were in flight training that didn't have college degrees. So anybody with a degree can go to officer training school and become a line officer, and that's what I elected to do.
Would you have rather been a pilot?
That's what I thought I wanted to do, rather than a pilot. And I must have written on the Navy papers that I wanted to be a lawyer, because when I graduated from officer training school in Fort Schuyler, New York, I was sent to the staff of Admiral O.C. Badger. Admiral Badger was, I think, a second in command under Nimitz. I'm not positive about that. I was on his staff on the island of Oahu in the Hawaiian Islands. And that's where I was when the bombs were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki to end the war.
What were your thoughts about that?
I was glad.
Yeah.
And I think a bunch of Mickey Mouse people are highly critical of President Truman for giving a command that we drop the bombs. I realized that they were devastating and that were many, many people killed, but there would have been a lot more people killed. The attacks that had been made on the islands leading up to the dropping of those bombs. Many people were killed. Many Marines and Army officers and men were killed.
But you were there in Hawaii.
In Hawaii on the staff of Admiral Badger.
That wasn't bad duty, was it? It was pretty good duty.
It was. I was serving under a full lieutenant. Now, a full lieutenant in the Navy would be the equivalent of a captain in the Army. I reported to him, and then we had some enlisted men under us. Admiral Badger had the chief of staff, who was a graduate of the United States Naval Academy. And all of us recognized that if you were in the reserve and hadn't gone to the academy, you wouldn't have a big-time life in the Navy because you weren't wearing one of those Naval Academy rings that everybody who graduated from the Naval Academy had. The man to whom I reported was a full lieutenant, and he got a message that his wife's father had died. The bombs had been dropped by then, and depending on how many points you had, you were going to be released from duty. He asked to go back home to Connecticut to his wife's father's funeral. They said, you can do that, and because you're so near to being available for discharge from the Navy because the war's over, you won't have to come back. Here am I, just a mere ensign in the Navy Reserve, and I'm now in charge of that group of people. The chief of staff called me on the phone one day, right after my superior officer had gone back. He shouted so loudly over the phone, I wouldn't have needed the damn telephone. And he said, Morris? Yes, sir. Now, you're going to be reviewing all of the orders that come in from people on ships who have been court-martialed and sentenced to some kind of penal duty. And he said, I want you to examine those carefully because I don't want any of them to go to Washington because they'll have Admiral Badger's signature on them, and I don't want them sent back. Do you understand that? I said, yes, sir, I understand that. So one day he called me and he said, Morris, yes, sir, get up here right now, yes, sir. The rule was, in a proceeding on a ship, if you had a captain's mast, captain's mast was a proceeding in which the captain would deal out the punishment to the person who'd committed the infraction of some kind, some wrong. And the rule was that a statement could be made by the person who was about to receive punishment in mitigation of the punishment. But that statement could not be inconsistent with his plea of guilty if he had pled guilty. So this fellow, Admiral Badger's chief of staff, said, I've looked at these proceedings, you have approved them, and that statement is inconsistent with the plea of guilty, isn't it? And I said, no, sir, I don't believe it is. I wouldn't have signed it if I had thought it was inconsistent. Well, damn it, Morris, read that again. So I read it, and he said, now don't you believe that that's inconsistent with a plea of guilty? And you know, everybody recognized that a four-striper, that's what that chief of command was, that a four-striper who'd graduated from the academy had authority because of his background, which would exceed a four-striper if he was in the reserves. Just an ensign in the reserve, and he asked me that a second time. I said, no, sir, I don't think it is. And about that time, the admiral had called the chief of staff, so the proceeding stopped. We had to wait there until the chief of staff came back. Well, I had with me an old, I can't remember the name of the term, but in the Navy, there were some people who grew up as an enlisted man, maybe went into the Navy just as an 18-year-old boy and grew up, became an officer, and he was an officer, and I think he was a three-striper. So this three-striper, he was a great guy. He'd come up from the ranks. He said, are you sure you're right about this? And I said, yes, sir, I think I am. I wouldn't have signed it if I hadn't thought I was right. He said, well, give those papers to me and I'll convince that old he's wrong. We left, and then in some period of time, which was fairly soon, I was sent back to the West Coast, and I never heard anything more about it. Nothing bad happened.
That old man was convinced, apparently?
Yeah, he was.
Well, that's pretty remarkable. You're in your early 20s that you would stand up to somebody like that.
Well, that's right. I mean, it was pretty hard to do, because the way Navy people were trained, rank meant something, and rank from the Naval Academy really meant something.
Did you doubt yourself, wondered, well, maybe I'm wrong?
No, I didn't, because I was pretty convinced I was right.